Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The Specialists are back, and we are continuing our coverage of Deal or No Deal Island. We are recapping episode number 4, the moment we've all been waiting for, because we saw it in the trailer 4 weeks ago now, where Boston Rob, we knew, was going to play Deal or No Deal at some point, and we finally got him playing Deal or No Deal in this episode. Actually led to some interesting conversation points and some interesting strategy, which again, I think Deal or No Deal Island is actually delivering on those elements. Even if I have to start with this, even if this could be the most egregious deal in the history of any reality show, 9 on one side, 3 on the other. Will, how do they get away with that?
I think I figured it out. How they're getting away with it. First, it's been a while. I feel like I have not even been able to be on the podcast. I like how I am here every Tuesday for Deal or No Deal, yet I've missed 2 out of the 3 Survivor recaps.
And I missed the Jake
predictions and power rankings, which I'm super bummed. I'm a big fan of Jake's. I hope you told him hello from me. I doubt that you did.
I said nothing but bad things.
Yeah, I've been very slammed. I got to say, I'm pretty exhausted and almost dead right now. But we're talking Deal or No Deal Island, and I do think that I have it somewhat figured out on how they actually are legally allowed to rig the game. So, Phil, are you ready?
Yes.
I think they have an algorithm for whatever deal is offered. Do you agree?
What do you mean by that? Like an algorithm to determine the price?
Yes. So an algorithm that takes into account all the variables. So the variables being how many cases we started with, how many cases are missing, you know, that have been opened basically from the list, and then the amounts in those cases. And they have an algorithm that takes all of that information and then we'll spit out a number, and nobody knows what's in his case. I mean, some human being likely knows, you know, unless they shuffle up all the briefcases, throw numbers on them, and then randomly place them, which, hey, maybe that's exactly what they do.
Could be it.
And that could be totally fine. So you agree with me there that there is an algorithm just based on those variables?
I think based on, especially after watching this one, there has to be, because Boston Rob, for as bad as he played Deal or No Deal, might have played the best version you can play for Deal or No Deal Island, which is to eliminate all of one half of the board, because then the offer is going to fall at a place in this algorithm where it's not in between numbers, because the only way to make this even, they would have had to offer him like $550, which was never going to happen.
Right. And we've seen this a little bit, but yeah, it's based on kind of what the bigger values are there and all that. What I think with this one, and then maybe we need to go back and look at the other boards, because the board keeps changing. I think that's where the show can get away with a little funny business. I think the left side of the board, the largest amount was $750. And then on the right side of the board, the lowest amount was like $75,000. Like there was no, like having that big of a gap between the left and right side of the board, that might not have to be like, they might be able to choose what those are or say, hey, to their lawyers and attorneys that make that check to make sure the game is fair and legal. They say, well, these cases are determined, the right side of the board is determined on what the people get in the challenge. And then the other half we will fill in, you know, randomly, or like we're going to do this.
So far, the left side's always been 1,000 or less every time.
Right. But this one was even 750. It was like noticeably low. And I think the greater gap you have there between the highest number on the left side and the lowest number on the right side, that is going to basically, I don't know, it will give you a chance to really have the deal be weighted in one direction where it's really obvious to either say no deal or deal. And what did Rob have here? I think he had like 11
cases. He had 500 bucks. There were 12 cases left. Nine of them were below.
Right. Okay. And so we're dealing with nine and three. Yeah. You're going to get something like that when the cases have that huge gap on those sides. And so I feel like what they could do is basically rig the game, not with the algorithm or knowing what's in his case, but just in terms of what numbers they're putting on the player's board. So I think that's something we have to look out for. And if that gap is narrowed, if it goes from $1,000 to like $20,000, it's going to be a harder game to play because the deals will be more closer to the middle where you'll have an even number below and above the offer. Does that make sense?
It does. And so even when the numbers aren't exactly what they were tonight or on last night, the numbers have been pretty large gaps. From the left side to the right side, it's been massive gaps. Now, back in the old version of Deal or No Deal, that was not the case. You would go from like 1 to 5,000, then to 10,000, then whatever. I forget what the exact numbers were, but it wasn't this massive gap. Where in this game, you are literally talking, everybody's had 1,000 or less on the left side, and their lowest number on the other side has been like 100,000. That's a huge gap. Where if you do wipe out one side of the board, it does work in your favor. Boston Rob played the worst game of Deal or No Deal. Now, granted, Deal or No Deal is a luck game, but he played the worst game of Deal or No Deal, and he had the easiest decision to make. And when I saw the $49,000 offer, I said, man, that's a little sketchy. But then I look at the numbers, and I'm like, but he has 350, 200, and 100 or whatever left. They can't offer him triple digits. So even if they went lower and said, we're going to offer you $1,200, because maybe that's more.
That's what I mean. Even if they had offered that. Exactly. Even if they had offered $1,200, then you're going to say yes, because that, I mean, and I think that's why, and again, I haven't looked at the older games and I could be wrong, but has that gap been as big?
The gap has been huge every time.
Interesting. Yeah,
and if you're in the chat and you're disagreeing, you can add in there. But I'm like 99.9% sure the gap has been huge every time.
Yeah, I don't know if it was ever that big, though. Like, even if it's 1,000 to 25,000.
I think what's happening is the right side, the numbers are getting bigger. The left side is staying the same. It's the penny to 750 or whatever. But the right side, the numbers are getting bigger because it's what they're taking from the challenge.
Yes, and that's clearly still, like, they know what cases are going to get taken, especially if you put out all the cases and they come back, you know, I don't know.
Although if that's only half of them were used in this challenge.
Which you makes talk you, about a bit. I mean, yeah, it makes you wonder.
Anyway. But yeah, that had to have been the case. So this again goes back to where the Deal or No Deal portion of the game is very much luck based. And like, good for Boston Rob being able to pull it out in this way. I guess whatever he did, it worked for him. So good on him. Good job, Boston Bob. You did it.
Yeah, but even if he didn't like get one side of the board and it was a little bit more spread out, he could say no deal, no deal, and get to a point where it's like, because even if you have like 3-2, I don't know. I feel like the offer is always going to be, I don't know. I feel like you're going to have an offer where you have a very easy decision to make when the gap is that big. So
this is it. Thomas McGee, Boston Rob played the worst game of Deal or No Deal, but he played the best game of Deal or No Deal Island. And then the short guy says, Rob was chill at the end. It was very chill. I like when he gets to get rid of somebody and says, this is a really hard decision. And you're like, yeah, dude.
He didn't want to be a dick about it. Should we talk about his strategy? And that he basically told Amy, is that her name? Amy.
Yes. Yes. First episode with Amy and Miranda. Those were two new names. That was fun to see them.
Yeah. Miranda kind of came out of nowhere. And then
I honestly was like,
Amy, we had seen a little bit of. But yeah. We're still meeting the cast here in episode 4. That's for sure. But I couldn't really tell because he tells Amy, he's like, I want to go play, put me in, I want to do it. And he tells the audience pretty much, hey, I want to go play, let me do it. Mm-hmm. But then he also has this kind of aside where he's like, hey, maybe Amy will just think because I want to play so badly that she's not going to put me in, and that can maybe work out too. So I couldn't really tell if he was gaming it. I think I do agree with Rob that you probably want to play than not play if you're in Rob's situation, where I think the people that were likely the other options that could have gone to play, you are probably the target for two of those people. So you have, you know, if you're not playing, it's basically, and those people are playing, then your chances increase because there's two other people that are going to pick you. They're going to eliminate you if they're able to win the game. But if you play yourself, it's just 50-50. You know, if you win, you survive. And if you lose, you're out. So I think that was the smart move. What did you think?
I thought Amy was dumb for picking him. I agree with you. I think she was dumb for picking him. If you want the best chance you have of eliminating Boston Rob is to put somebody else out there, because it's still, I guess it's essentially still a 50-50 chance, right? Because if somebody else goes out there and plays the game of Deal or No Deal and they win, they're going to pick Rob to go home. If they lose, they go home. So I guess you could still consider it a 50-50 chance. Maybe it's even less than a 50-50 chance. Maybe it's actually more favorable to make Rob play it. But the thing is, by picking Rob, you allow him in a position where if he does survive, he gets to make the decision. And that just feels like a stupid move. Plus, now he's going to hate you because that's what Boston Rob does. So Boston Rob will now always want Amy out of the game. You allowed Boston Rob to protect himself because I think Boston Rob was 100% right that had anybody else played and lost or and won, he's gone. They're picking him to go home. So at least he's in control of his own fate, rather than letting somebody else just point at him and say, Rob, you're done.
Yeah, you want to at least play the game and give yourself a chance. And you know that you can maybe end up just getting in a lucky situation like he did here. You can just luck your way into a very favorable deal in this game. So, I think that was a wise move from Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what did you think about Amy, though? Like, is Amy obviously was going to be safe here, right? Like, she was going to be safe because she was on the winning side of this, so it didn't really make
sense. She was the captain. Yeah, she had immunity.
Yeah, she had immunity.
Yeah, I think you what you do is you pick someone else, and if they lose, great, they're gone. And if they win, they're going to pick Boston Rodri gone, and so your adversary's gone. And yes, I guess you could say the same thing. Whoever you pick to go and they win, they'll be mad at you also. But probably better to have one of these random first-time players of a game like this mad at you than have Boston Rob, you know, be coming after you. So
that's how I feel too, especially with how Boston Rob, like when they said, who are you the closest with, who do you trust the most, and everybody's like Aaron, it wasn't even a question. So you already know he has Aaron in his pocket. Aaron and Alyssa are very close. Boston Rob's getting in with Alyssa, seems like he's getting in with Nick a little bit. So there are some moves happening from Boston Rob. He can just take everybody and say, let's get rid of Amy, and it seems like it's going to work because people are getting very aggravated with Amy.
Yeah. And it seems like Boston Rob can just do whatever he wants this game. It's like, oh, wow, Amy said Boston Rob's name. Big whoop. Like, of course, everyone's going to talk about Boston Rob. And he just was able to, like, spin it against Amy so quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a pro at this, and you can see why. But it's like it's sometimes hard to, because we've seen it so many times. It's almost like you're watching this, and it's like, man, how are these people falling for this easily? Like, why don't Aaron and Alyssa, I mean, I get keep him as a shield, but at some point, you got to get Rob out of there. Like, mm-hmm. you got to get him out of there. Unless mm-hmm. they're just not allowed to. I don't know. Maybe it's like the show is just not letting you go against Rob. I don't know.
Well, how do you get rid of him though? You can't. You haven't been able to get rid of him yet, right? Like,
I mean, this was the closest chance at getting rid of Rob. And yeah.
So now, if you're Rob, you just watched this happen, and these are the comments that are happening over here. We have Patrick Stahl who says, "I said it before. You want to knock off all the lowest values from the right side of the board possible in the first round, then take the deal." Reese English has agreed, but it's all luck, unfortunately. Now that we've seen this play out and we've seen somebody have a bad game but do this, and we've seen how much this really is luck-based, do you ever want to be playing Deal or No Deal?
I mean, I think, like we just said, Rob made a good play here to take Deal or No Deal instead of just watching someone else play. I'd rather play if I know that I'm the target for like two or three people, that if they go and play, I'm going to go home. I would rather just play myself and just mm-hmm. roll the dice. Because the good thing with Deal or No Deal is you can keep, you don't have to take the deal. So you can just keep saying, you know what, no deal, no deal, no deal. And then open up your case and you have, you know, $600,000 and there you go. And all your deals were below, you know, your deal was below it. How does it work? If you ever turn down a higher deal, or is it just the final deal?
It's just the final deal. You just have to accept a deal that is better than your case, or you have to take your case when it's higher than the deal that you're saying.
Than the deal that is currently offered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And you don't take, I mean, that would be at the end of the game. You have to play all the way through, and the case that's remaining has to be lower than what's actually in your case, essentially, because mm-hmm. the deal then would be in the middle.
Yeah. And I think there was this part of the game with Deal or No Deal in this episode where the host, Joe, is like, oh, you're playing for yourself to stay in the game, or you're playing for the group to increase the prize. And it's like, you're not increasing the prize. Like, enough with this. That was so forced.
They need to fix that if they get a second season, which I know we talked about last week. Are they going to get a second season? We don't know. If they are going to get a second season, they really do need to fix that, because the fact is they're not playing for anything. Rob just added $49,000 to one case that could be the first case pulled. We saw that with Boston Rob. Two of his first three cases were $1 million and 1.5. Or like,
I wanted to talk to you about that. Do you think the show knew
his kids' birthdays? I'm just saying it's a little fishy how this is going these last couple weeks.
I know you're all over it. But I mean, how do you know which daughter he would have gone with first, or that he wouldn't have gone with Amber's birthday first, or his own birthday first?
Kids and Amber, and it was all the high numbers.
I think there was one in there that was like $600 or something.
His grandma. Remember, he messed up his grandma too, and he said it was this day.
I think he was kidding. Really, I think at that point. And at some point, I was like, Rob, get rid of the birthday strategy, man.
I mean, it's kind of like the fake reason, right? Why are you picking that number? Because it's a number, but let's pretend we're picking it for some specific reason. It's insane how Deal or No Deal lasted as long as it did, when the entire premise of the show is just people saying a case number. Like, that's like the whole game is just, I'm gonna say that one, then that one, then that one. And think about, do I want to accept an offer? It's so ridiculous.
No, I mean, they had the case girls, and they had Howie, and they had the lights, and they made a show of it. It was, you know, like a spectacle of these cases. But everyone is playing to watch the deal. And you put yourself in that position. If this was real money, and I know that I think that's here what's kind of lost from the game, is that there's no actual real money involved. And not that I even really care. I think that it's still a really interesting game. I just think, from the original, you have people that are like being offered like $80,000, right? Like $80,000 is a lot of money. And
a lot of these games are being played in like 2005, 2006, when that was a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you have an $80,000 offer, and okay, you're going to get like half of that after taxes, whatever. Still, you're going to get $40,000. Like, awesome, right? And you have that in the bank. You can say yes to that. But then you see up there, there's a $200,000 case and a $400,000 case. And you're just like, I mean, it's a real situation that you're like, what would you do? And everyone's yelling at their TV. It's very simple, deal or no deal. And it's so clean and so simple. And that's why it was, you know, such a big hit. I think with here, this game, we're just going, it's like, okay, it's obvious. It's usually more obvious what the right answer is here, because you're not trying to actually make money. There's no personal emotion or stakes other than like, I'm just going to play the odds. Is it more likely to be higher or more likely to be lower than the case that I currently have. So there's some of those stakes removed, but honestly, it doesn't bother me all that much.
Yeah, and we have Reese English here with his comment. I want to throw this one up. The banker just goes based off math, and because the case values go up exponentially, the player almost always gets a good deal at some point, which we have seen. And it hasn't always been the right move to make a good deal, because we have seen certain circumstances where it's like 5-3 in different areas, whatever. The short guy is like playing fake deal or no deal when you don't win money. It's kind of
Because I remember you used to be able to go and play online. Like, you could just go to a website and you would just be like, just
no deal, and hope you get $1 million.
You just go no deal, no deal, no deal. It's like, oh, $6. You're like, well, who cares? I'm just going to play again. I'm going to get the $1 million case. So it is fun when you play at like Dave and Buster's or like a bowling alley or like Game Time, like one of those type of places. And it's like for the tickets, and you can like have, hopefully you get the ticket. And you're actually playing for something that has still very little value, because you can redeem like $10,000 tickets for like a finger trap or something. And the inflation on Dave and Buster's prizes, and oh, it's got really out of hand. Yeah. But at least that's fun, because there's actually real, there's like some sort of value attached to it. But
yeah. Let's talk about the challenge a little bit. Let's talk about the strategy that went into this challenge and all of that, how Rob essentially tried to pull a, you take care of her, I'll take care of you. We kind of got that a little bit here with poor Aaron, who was like using his little jet ski to get out of there as fast as possible. What did you think about this challenge and the bluffing mechanism and the fact that even though Rob's side won 3 out of 5, they ended up losing the challenge?
A lot to say on this one, actually. I really, really like this challenge. I've actually produced this challenge for some shows. If you've watched All Star Shore, I doubt no one who's listening has watched All Star Shore.
I didn't even know you worked on that show, and you were a groomsman in my wedding. So that tells you how many people have watched that show.
If you watch All Star Shore, basically we have teams competing the whole time. It's like pairs. And then at the very end, we did the thing where it's like, all right, now you're going to go against your teammate head to head. And we did a best 2 out of 3 version of this very game. It was a little bit different, but it was the same idea, where it's basically we had like a chest. You open up the chest, you look inside it, and you want to have the thing inside. We had like a golden cup, like a golden solo cup, because that was a big prop from the show. And you wanted the golden cup, but once you look at it and close it, then the other person can then, it's on a lazy Susan, and then can then, you know, either keep it for, or like switch the chest or keep the chest they have. And it's all about trying to figure out, like, read your opponent's face, bluffing, all that. It's super fun. And I really like this version of the game, of the challenge. I really think it works. I mean, we had a golden cup, and it was, who, you know, it was still really fun. It actually went really well. I don't know if you can ever watch that anywhere. It's on Paramount Plus, I believe. But this was cool because, again, we have deal or no deal cases. We have briefcases. And I said this, I think, when we did the premiere recap, that these briefcases are just really fun props, because you can put anything in a briefcase, and that the money value is now inside the case instead of outside the case. It made this game really interesting. You open both, you look at them, you're trying to read which one's higher. I think it fits the total kind of gamey aesthetic that they're trying to go for. Obviously, we had to throw in some like motor boats that were going way too slow. I could hear the network notes that it's like, okay, we like this case bluffing game, we need to make it feel bigger. All right, let's get 2 boats. And then most rounds, they didn't even show them getting on the boat. They showed it in like the first one and then like the last one with
because
Aaron
of Rob's situation. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think I actually like them strategizing and talking here, like, hey, give this one to me, I'll save you. Love all of that. I thought it was really well done. You didn't really need the boat thing. I could be wrong. My guess here is that these cases, like the pairs of cases, basically were like predetermined. I could be wrong, but I really think
they had to take them from the specific, there was like, they were like paired off and they were in their specific, you know,
like, 'cause they were in pairs. It's not like they were going down a line grabbing one random one.
My question is this. Yes, you're right. That is how it went. They were in pairs that were already done. But did each team have the same numbers in their pairs? Because half of the cases were thrown away. Whichever team wasn't bluffing, their cases weren't used.
Can you look at the deal or no deal game on the right? Are they going up in any reliable order or pattern?
I think it's $250,000. But I think it's like there's no, because in this one there was a 90,000, there was a 100,000.
Yeah, but I just mean, were there like holes, like big distances between numbers, or is it pretty steady? Like, was it like, oh, these were the ones that were in the game? I think that these were predetermined and that both teams came back with the same numbers, and it was determined what round the numbers were going to be in. Because if you think about it,
that's why the last one they knew that it was still going to matter.
Didn't we have a $1 million one and then like a $1.25 million one?
And the $1.25 million one is why the other team was able to win, not Rob's team was able to win.
Right, because you would never want a round where it's a million and 1.25 million and it's like, oh, okay, like I lost and I still got $1 million for my team.
Yeah.
Like that would be really dumb. I think you need the differences in the case values for this game to be distinct enough to actually have influence each round, or else it's like, oh, 90,000 and 75,000. Who cares which one you get if those are the two cases pulled? So I don't think that the values were just like randomly. I think each round was predetermined what the value would be, and they knew that if a team won three out of the first four, that the team down 3-1 would still have a chance to come back and win the fifth round. Now, if they had won four, if they'd gone 4-0 and won every single round, then at that point, it's like, all right, that's a blowout. We're not going to make the only round, the last round, the only round that matters. And you're not going to come back from that. But I do think they produced these case values.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it now. It was 75, 90, 100, 300, 400, 600.
So we went from 90 to 300?
No, it went 90, 100, then 300. So I do feel like there's opportunity for gaps, because then it was 600 to 750, then 850, then 1.25, then 1.5. So I feel like there might have been a $1 million case and maybe a $200,000 case that we're missing.
Okay. So, I mean, maybe, okay, there are enough gaps in there, especially between 100 and 300. I feel like you always got like a 150, a 200, or a 250.
Yeah. Between 4 and 6, between 850 and 1.25 is a huge gap.
Yeah. Usually got like the 1 million, obviously. So maybe it was just the other team's cases were discarded. But I do think the pairs of cases, like they had to be. What was, do we know the, I mean, I know we're not like sitting here watching the episode, but what was like the biggest difference in the two, or the smallest difference in the two cases in
10,000 between 100 and 90,000.
Wait, are you saying, no, I'm saying in the challenge.
Oh, when they were actually going head to head, I have no idea.
Yes. Because you're not going to play around where it's like 90,000 and 100,000.
Yeah, I feel like they were pretty big gaps.
Yeah. I think so. I think that was, the pairs of cases were at least like matched together. So you knew you're always going to get like one case being substantially higher than another. And then the team that got there first really did get to put them out and decide the, or at least decide the role, who's going to bluff, who's going to guess.
And Rob, yeah, I love this Rob game. Was fun with that, where he was figuring out the entire.
Yeah, no, that's what this game needs. You need really good interview bites, and Rob mashed it out of the park. He delivered on this completely. So
so rare for him, huh?
Yeah, right. No, but I mean, for him, really. And then Aaron beats him at the end, which was great. And then Rob was trying to make the deal. I think this was my favorite challenge yet. And it didn't feel as rigged as last week's challenge, even though I liked last week's challenge too.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, especially that it ended with Aaron getting Rob and duping him, because Rob was trying to say, no, you got to protect me, you got to do this, you got to do that. I thought that really wasn't good.
Aaron trying to double bluff Rob? It seemed like Rob had it, and then Rob was like, oh man, that's too easy. He let out a frown and then a smile. I think he was trying to just do a single bluff, and then Rob gave him too much credit that he was trying to do like a double bluff or a double reverse.
It's almost like Rob has spent so much time with him that he actually thinks he's smarter than he is.
Yeah, or that he's like, he's learned something from me. He wouldn't just, you know, frown at the big case and smile at the bad case. That'd be too easy. So maybe he's actually doing that. But I think his initial read was right.
Yeah. No, his initial read was right. And then he ended up blowing it. Reese says 100%. So what was I going to say? So I always compare this back to the traders, right? And by the way, if you're listening to this podcast, McKenna and I are doing amazing race recaps now. We'll be doing those on Thursdays because obviously we're not going to do them Wednesdays because Wednesdays are Survivor days. But if you want to check out our amazing race stuff, the thing with amazing race is a lot of it just feels like, okay, there's not much of a game to a lot of what's going on. And then we talk about a show like The Traders where they're trying to get these huge productions and they're doing all this stuff. And sometimes I feel like it doesn't have a purpose to the ultimate goal of the show. I do think Deal or No Deal Island might have one of like the best game show formats going right now. It's just, I don't know if Deal or No Deal Island itself is all that compelling.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, the challenges here, I liked how one team got immunity today. Like even that yep. part was good. Like and I just love
not be in danger.
I just love that we had, these briefcases can be used in so many, like a variety of ways and that they have some sort of influence on the final game. And I think, you know, the amount of influence they have can be, you know, questioned. Like, okay, if we got like the $250,000 case instead of the $100,000 case from this challenge, how different is Deal or No Deal for Rob at the end? Probably not all that different, but at least they, you know, there's some through line there. And then, you know, players are switch. There's the steal. I mean, there's swapping and then there's sometimes teams, sometimes you're on your own. Sometimes you're in pairs. Like, I think it's all really been working with me and that basically the challenge has such a big role in who is going to get eliminated that we care about the challenge and that we're like, I want to know who wins. I want to know who's safe. Who are the people that are going to be the two on the bottom that have a chance to go or maybe potentially here, you know, three people on the losing team or four people on the losing team. So, yeah, that's something that's absolutely missing from the Traders. And then Amazing Race. I remember when we watched it, there'd be some rounds where they do a whole country. I forget the country. I think it was like Norway. They went all the way there, ran through the mountains and the fjords. It's beautiful. They have the local farmer and then they have the rock climbing and the stunts. And then they like get to the end of the race and they're like, oh, this was a non-elimination.
Yeah, leg. Yeah.
And
you're like, they're not doing non-elimination legs in season 36, by the
okay,
way.
Okay, good.
That's actually nice.
Good. Cause then you watch that and you're like, so what was the point?
Yeah, this episode was just an episode of watching
the Travelocity ad or whoever has the gnome. Like, is that?
I've always said with the Amazing Race, it does feel like as people are able to travel more on their own, the Amazing Race becomes less compelling. You know, whereas Deal or No Deal Island is something where you're still playing a game. And I know the Amazing Race, you're racing. That's exciting. I mean, I won't lie. When they started the race, I said, ooh, it's kind of refreshing to sit down and watch that again for the first time in a long time. But it is still one of those things where it's just, you know, it's a race and it goes where there's not as much of strategic elements throughout, even though there will be strategy in the Amazing Race. This right here, it feels like there's a lot of strategizing going on. I was surprised Amy wanted to take the leadership role, but then she did. Her team wins. She goes after Rob. Rob wins. He can't take her out. So he takes out Kim. Finally, Kim goes home. We didn't even mention that until right now.
Yeah, it's actually crazy how little Kim got in this episode.
In her booth.
Yeah, she was pretty quiet.
Our purple queen.
Yeah.
Yeah. There hasn't been an internet tirade over how she got robbed, though. So I guess Deal or No Deal Island's not at that level yet.
Yeah, I think I liked Kim for her time on the show. I think she was like a nice kind of foil for Rob and you know, knew who he was, wasn't afraid to like talk, go against him, all that. And she's like this kind of older lady archetype who usually is like a nice, sweeter mom type of player or person. So it was a refreshing role, I think. And am I like devastated she's gone? No, but I think her time was, it was, we had a good time with Kim.
It was well used. One.
Yeah.
I want to throw up this comment from Rose V. I don't know if it's that great of a show, but I get a kick out of it. And Rob makes me laugh. And that's kind of how I feel right now. I don't think I love this show, but I'm entertained by this show pretty greatly. And I do look forward to this show being on in a way that, sorry, Traders fans, like I wasn't with the Traders by the end. The end of the Traders, man, I was struggling. I was not enjoying that.
I still look forward to the Traders, though, I think. And I think I look forward to the Traders more than this show, even though I think this show is doing a lot of things right that the Traders doesn't. But I think the Traders just had a better cast, and I think
that's
so big. No, where this show comes down to is like, you want to watch the people. You want to care about the people. And the game format can be fun and compelling. If you don't care about the people, it's not going to work. And then you're going to have great people, and the game format's wonky, and you're still going to like look forward and like it to it more. Like when I was sitting down for the trader some nights, and it'd be like, oh, after work, I'm like, okay, it's 6 p.m. It just came out, and I'd finally like hit down, like sit down, hit play. And I'm like, oh, hell yeah. I got an hour of the traders. Like, mm-hmm. We have Parv on our screens. Like, we have Sand right here. You know,
I think once Parv left, that's when I said, eh.
Even Phaedra, I think was really fun on that season. And here, when we're sitting down, it's like, all right, we're just going to hear Boston Rob talk to us for 45 minutes. And I'm not too upset with that.
Yeah, it's not the worst way to spend a little bit of time. Where was I going to go next? I think that's it. I don't think I'm going anywhere else. Did I miss anything on this episode? What did I miss?
No, I mean, I think what I liked about this episode too is we had way more like just, I don't even know what you want to call it. I would call it reality. But like camp life, that's what we would say for mm-hmm. Survivor, like camp life scenes. I don't know. We want to call it. What do we call their living quarters on the show? Just like,
they call it the camp. They call it back to camp, which is funny because it's not a camp. It's not a camp. It's like a resort.
Yeah. They're glamp. They're glamping pad. Yeah, we got more of that because Rob took the very first deal offered. So the game of Deal or No Deal was so short that I think we got to spend more time with the people before. So
yeah, which I can't really complain about a shorter Deal or No Deal game like that. I'm never going to be mad about it. I actually think the Deal or No Deal portion of it is the least interesting part of the show, but I enjoy the dynamic of if this person,
I don't think it's too bad. Like
out.
I think as long as they speed through opening up the cases,
mm-hmm.
for me, it's like, I like to see what the deal is, what the thought process is, and then who the person's going to kick out. Like you still,
well, that's, I like that. I like the fact that it does impact who's going to go home. So mm-hmm. I do enjoy that.
Yeah. I don't need to see cases open. I don't need to see every case opened.
Reese put this one in here twice, so I better read it. The show acts like beating the banker is skill. Claudia had more Deal or No Deal experience than anyone and still lost. It's luck. That's kind of the part where I'm like, I kind of roll my eyes a little bit at watching the Deal or No Deal portion. I like to listen to that part, but if I have something else to do, I'll kind of like come over to my computer and do it. I mean, you can see my TV's.
Right. Yeah. You basically just want to wait for the deals. And then see where the numbers lie and kind of be like, huh, well, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's some suspense in, you know, opening the final case.
Whatever. And Rob's, there was legitimate suspense to Rob's. I think it was legit, especially because with it being Rob, there was a serious desire for him not to go home.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me, I really did not want him out.
Oh, yeah. If Rob goes home this episode, I think episode 5 and out, and then I think it
starts to hurt.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I do agree with that for sure. Yeah, no, I'm excited. Look, I'm excited to watch it. This is fun TV on Monday nights. Will, we're going to start doing this Tuesdays during the day, right? That's what we kind of said. Like at least next week, it'll be Tuesday during the day.
I think so. Yeah. During the day works.
That's going to be the plan.
We don't know how to watch it Monday nights. Like I just don't know how to watch it.
I mean, it's on NBC. The problem is for me, I podcast with John at 8 o'clock doing our movie stuff, which we just did most popular movie ever. We did the Adam Sandler bracket. We're going to keep that as the Monday slot. It's not on until 10 o'clock Eastern, which just sucks, man. Like it really, really sucks. Especially then if we can just do it. We can just do it Tuesday during the day, like when I'm awake at a normal time anyway, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah. And I don't think there's that many people that are like clamoring right after the episode ends. Like we need to get a live instant reaction.
We have our most people watching a Deal or No Deal episode live this episode. Like this is the best we've done thus far, so people are still into it, so that's cool. At least that's fun. But yeah, I don't think people are like, damn, if Phil and Will don't talk about this tonight, I'm gonna be so pissed. Whereas like Survivor, that's kind of how people feel.
Yes, and again, that's why I've made every Deal or No Deal podcast, because we can just decide whenever we are both free and can do it. Whereas the Survivor ones, like, we have to get something out Wednesday night. And if mm-hmm. I miss it, I miss it. And Blake's been doing a great job covering for me. And I shouldn't miss any more the rest of the season. I really feel pretty good. I was just in a really tight, tight spot.
On May 15th, for anybody wondering, May 15th might even be a Will and Blake special because I'm not around that night. So that might be a Will and Blake special, which would be even more fun. We can see the two of you interact for the first time off of Patreon. That's always fun.
Wow.
Wow.
Maybe I shouldn't. We should find someone else to do it so that people who want to see the Will and Blake interaction, which probably is the best version of interaction of any two podcast people on the entire specialist network, the Blake and Will combo. That stuff is, that's too hot. I don't know if we want to put that on the main channel. I think that's,
I know we have to keep that hidden. Keep that hidden from everybody. Actually, we're starting Marquesas on Monday. First episode will go out Monday night sometime. And that's our Patreon content of Phil, Will, and Blake, where Will and Blake just get mad at each other. And that's fun because Blake loves Marquesas. So that's going to be a really fun conversation when we eventually.
Yeah, but Blake just likes it because it was like the first season he watched.
No, it wasn't. I think he started later than that. Oh, is it? I love Marquesas and it's not the first season I watched. So that'll just be a fun discussion. Also,
I hate Marquesas.
Well, you're not a very intelligent man, huh?
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Also, I love how the letters for Deal or No Deal Island are Dondi. I just Dondi. Like
it actually like has a ring to it.
Yeah, Dondi, baby.
Dondi. Dondi.
Just like All Star Shore, they have great letters too.
Yeah, the great ones, like All Star Season. Willie D wants to know, would you rather watch Boston Rob on the Traders or Dondi?
Dondi.
Because we're watching him.
Yeah. I think if Rob went on the Traders,
he'd be done right away.
Yeah, he would be targeted early, whether or not like he could be a trader or not. Everyone's gonna be like, get Rob out of the house. Like
Rob kind of happened, could never win the Traders.
That's yeah. Like what happened to Johnny Bananas, how he was just like called out for being sharp by Dan. Like he's gonna figure out who I am. Let's get Bananas out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this. Will, are we locking in that we're going to do something tomorrow or no? For our fans who are listening?
Yeah, we're going to do a Phil and Will March Madness preview. We're going to do a live bracket fill-in. When I say fill-in, we can do a screen share. I have yet to look at a bracket. That's how in it I have been. I'm usually like watching the Selection Sunday show. I'm filling out like 25 brackets on ESPN. I think you can get 20 on Yahoo, you know, MSN, AOL, CBS. Like I'm filling out like hundreds of brackets, trying to get a perfect bracket one of these years. I'm entering pools, eliminator leagues, like tons of different fantasy groups, all that. I have not even looked at a damn bracket.
You can look tomorrow because at 1 o'clock.
I don't even know who the one seeds are. Like I am so out of it. I wasn't able to watch any conference championship weekend. Like just completely out of the loop. And if you feel the same way, Phil is going to catch us up. He's going to give me basically all the tips and tricks I need to win all of my pools. So look forward to that tomorrow.
Yeah, we're hoping around 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, maybe a little bit earlier, maybe a little bit later, but it's going to be in that window because then obviously we want to give it some time to breathe before we do Survivor, which we're going to be live right after the episode. What a time to be alive. Mm-hmm. What a time to be alive. So thank you all so much for listening. If you made it this far, please like and subscribe. If you're going to pick Virginia to win it all, listen to our podcast tomorrow because they're currently losing by 22 with 7 minutes remaining to Colorado State. So don't pick them. And Colorado State is not necessarily good just because they're beating Virginia. Virginia is absolute dog shit and should not have been in the tournament. Anyway, that's it. We got that. Hope you enjoyed this. If you want to check out some amazing race content, go check that out. McKenna and I did that late at night on Thursday. I think it might have even been Friday morning. So if you want to check out our premiere recap, go listen to that. Survivor content's out there. Check out the Jake O'Kane video. John and I did the most popular movie ever podcast, which was a really good time. And other than that, we'll see you later. Bye.
See ya.